In the last few sermons that I've given, we've been focused on the subject of not living by lies, which is a negative way of saying living by the truth, and that's what we all want to do, and so you can say it in a more positive way, living by the truth, or you can say it as in the negative way that we've said it. And what I want to do in the sermon this afternoon is to focus on why living by the truth is so crucial to overcoming the lies that will come upon us at the end of the age. The scriptures tell us that there is an age coming that is going to be a challenge to people on the earth, and especially a challenge to people in the Church of God. We've had that to some degree at different times in my experience in the church, where we've been challenged, and the question was, would we meet the challenge? And sometimes it's difficult to be able to discern, okay, what's the answer? What's right here? And what is the right choice? But with God's help, through His Spirit and through the Word of God, then we can sort things out and we can make a decision that is right and pleasing in God's sight. So to lay things out, I'd like to begin in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, which talks about a particular person who is going to have a great impact upon the end of the age. He is labeled the man of sin. The man of sin. And the Apostle Paul speaks of him in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. And so let's read through that, beginning in verse 3. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 3. It says, "Let no one deceive you by any means, for that day will not come unless the falling away comes first. And the man of sin is revealed, the son of perdition, who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped, so that he sits as God in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. Do you not remember that when I was still with you, I told you these things? And now you know what is restraining, that he may be revealed in his own time. For the mystery of lawlessness is already at work. Only he who now restrains will do so until he is taken out of the way. And then the lawless one will be revealed, whom the Lord will consume with the breath of his mouth and destroy with the brightness of his coming. The coming of the lawless one is according to the working of Satan, with all power, signs, and lying wonders, and with all unrighteous deception among those who perish, because they did not receive the love of the truth that they might be saved." So the church has traditionally taught that this man of sin is a powerful religious figure to appear at the end of the age just prior to the coming of Jesus Christ. In the booklet that the church has about the book of Revelation, specifically the book of Revelation Unveiled is the title of the booklet, it speaks of this individual and correlates him with Revelation chapter 13, the second beast that you find in Revelation chapter 13. Looking at Revelation chapter 13, verses 11 and 12, Revelation chapter 13, verses 11 and 12. It says, "Next John says, 'Then I saw another beast coming out of the earth. He had two horns like a lamb, but he spoke like a dragon. He exercised all the authority of the first beast on his behalf and made the earth and its inhabitants worship the first beast, whose fatal wound had been healed.'" So who is the second beast? The second beast is a tool of Satan who uses his position and authority to influence mankind to worship the first beast. So this is going to be an individual who's going to have a great deal of influence over humanity. Question, how will he persuade the masses to accept such arrogance, you know, that he's calling himself God and that kind of thing? He will be a skillful deceiver, directly manipulated and empowered by Satan, and he performs great signs so that he even makes fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men. And he deceives those who dwell on the earth, by those signs which he was granted to do in the sight of the beast, telling those who dwell on the earth to make an image to the beast who was wounded by the sword and lived. He was granted power to give breath to the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause as many as would not worship the image of the beast to be killed. So John later describes this religious leader as the false prophet who had performed miraculous signs on his, that is, the beast, behalf. So Paul is telling the people in the church in Thessalonica, this is coming. I explained this to you when I was there in your midst. Now, we don't know what precipitated him laying this all out to the congregation in Thessalonica. We do know that some of it involved people trying to deceive the congregation, the people in the church, in regard to the coming the return of Christ and the resurrection. So that was one issue that they were facing in the congregation. So Paul sought to address that, and he also brings this up. So there had to be something going on that caused him to focus on that. We don't know what it was. But, you know, in time, I'm sure we'll find out. So, you know, as you compare the second beast of, these two individuals in Revelation 13 and 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, it says, so these two individuals are connected with a second beast, the false prophet of Revelation. So this is a person that is called the man of sin, and they are described in different places in Revelation and in 2 Thessalonians. And as you compare the two of them, you'll find certain similarities. And so let's just look at that for a second. You look at Revelation chapter 13, verses 13 and 14. Revelation chapter 13, verses 13 and 14. It speaks of this individual, and it says, he performs great signs, so that he even makes fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men. Now, I've never seen that. I doubt if anybody in the room has seen anything like that. But somebody is expected to come on the scene and do that very thing. Verse 14, and he deceives those who dwell on the earth by those signs which he was granted to do in the sight of the beast. Now, would you be impressed if somebody called fire down from heaven? I would be. I mean, we know Elijah did, and Elijah performed some truly dramatic miracles in his time. So he's doing this in the sight of the beast. So the beast is the political figure in this scenario. So he's political, and you have a religious figure in the picture, telling those who dwell on the earth to make an image to the beast who is wounded by the sword and live. So it's talking about the Roman Empire, which was defeated and was overrun and basically came back to life and was revived and began again. And that empire is going to play its last gasp in the end of the age. And in 2 Thessalonians, it says, the coming of the lawless one. So this religious figure is lawless. The lawless one is according to the working of Satan with all power, signs, and lying wonders. So the goal of all of what is demonstrated is to convince people to follow this the beast and the false prophet, to convince people to follow them, and people are going to be impressed, and they are going to follow them, but they're leading you astray. They're leading you astray. You notice that it's Satan's behind this, and with all power, signs, and lying wonders. Verse 10, and with all unrighteous deception among those who perish, because they did not receive the love of the truth that they might be saved. So people that do not know the truth are going to be taken in. They're going to be taken in, and this is going to be very impressive. And and they're going to follow along this path of unrighteousness, this lawless path. Verse 11, and for this reason God will send them strong delusion that they should believe the lie. So this individual is going to come on the scene and seek to deceive deceive the whole world. And that individual is going to accomplish that. And unless you know the truth, it's going to be easy to be taken in. And our experience in the church in my lifetime has been people have come preaching lawlessness, and a certain portion of people in the church that you would think would have known better actually followed that those who were teaching lawlessness. So we've seen it happen on a small scale in the Church of God. It goes on to say, it is true the second beast, the false prophet, causes the world to worship the first beast of Revelation 13:11. Then I saw another beast coming up out of the earth, and he had two horns like a lamb and spoke like a dragon. And he exercises all the authority of the first beast in his presence and causes the earth and those who dwell in it to worship the first beast whose deadly wound was healed. And it's interesting, as you read that, it says that this second beast, the false prophet, exercises all the authority of the first beast, the political figure. So it's telling you that these two individuals both have a lot of influence, a lot of power, and it seems that they're equal. It seems that they're equal in their influence on the world. And so there, one isn't preeminent over the other. They're dependent on each other in what they're carrying out. At this point, we should note who the source of their authority is. Who is the source of their authority? It's Satan. So Satan is going to be, and the demons are going to be very influential in this period to come. And you know that Satan is a liar and has been a liar from the beginning, and Satan deceives the whole world. So he's not changed. He's just going to use these two individuals in order to deceive the world and lead them to the crisis that's going to come at the end of the age. So as you look at these the false prophet in the book of Revelation, it talks about him having two horns like a lamb. So who is he seeking to portray himself as? Who is the Lamb of God? So he's going to portray himself as the Lamb. He's going to come across as a type of Christ and seek people to accept him in that very significant role. And it's a deception. But if you listen carefully, it says he spoke like a dragon. So if you listen carefully, you'll see, he's portraying himself as Christ, but what he's saying and doing doesn't fit with the one I know to be Jesus Christ. So if you know who Jesus Christ is and you have a relationship with him, you're not going to be taken in. And Paul is giving us this information in order that we would be aware of what's coming and we wouldn't allow ourselves to be taken in by that religious figure. As you look at Satan's gone to war with the saints, and talks about that in Revelation chapter 12 verse 17. It says, and the dragon was enraged with the woman. He hates the woman. And the animosity and enmity between the woman and Satan goes all the way back to Genesis chapter 3, verse 15. It's just the end of the age manifestation of that. Satan hates God, Jesus Christ, the church, and all of the people in the church. And his goal is to deceive them and lead them astray. And he's really going to push that at the end of the age. He's going to make war with the rest of her offspring who keep the commandments of God, who keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus Christ. So he's going to come after the church, the people in the church, He's going to come after you because you are keeping the law, because you are a follower of Jesus Christ. Revelation chapter 13, verse 4 says, "So they worshiped the dragon who gave authority to the beast, and they worshiped the beast, saying, 'Who is like the beast? Who is able to make war with him?'" So he's a powerful political figure who is powerful militarily, and he's tied in with this false prophet, and this false prophet is a very big part of what he's going to do. So the dragon gives his authority to the beast, and the second beast is also said to cause the world to worship the first beast. So should we be worshiping this beast? Of course not, but people will. And the expectation is that you will join with them in that worship, and there will be pressure brought to bear. You know, it says that he's making war with the people who keep the commandments of God. And if you, you know, don't realize it, by keeping the commandments, you stand out. You stand out, and they're going to, and so they're going to be able to, okay, who's part of this group? They're going to know. All you have to do is come, you know, okay, they meet on Saturdays. We can just roll in and round them up. Or keeping the feast, we can round them up then. We can find that these people are keeping God's Sabbath, and it makes you stand out and makes you vulnerable to Satan making war upon us. So the authority that this man of sin will have comes from Satan. And as you look at the man of sin and you look at the beast, they are more or less working together and equal. One is not superior to the other. So in reading 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 alone, we have to conclude the man spoken of in that chapter is a religious figure. Why would we say that he's a religious figure? And because the whole chapter is focused upon religious deception. Paul is warning the members of a deception that he must have discussed when he was among them. And he's talking about this religious deception coming. And let's just read through the passage and make a few comments on it just to bring out some details, beginning in 2 Thessalonians chapter 1. It says, "Now, brethren," and this is Paul speaking, "concerning the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ and our gathering together to him." So the context that he's talking about is the coming of Jesus Christ and our rising up in the air at his coming in a resurrection to be with him forever. And people were going about indicating that Christ had already come, that the resurrection was past. And Paul said, "Sorry, that's not true. And don't let anybody deceive you on that point, whether they write a letter, they talk to you, or however they approach you, that is not true." And there are certain things that are supposed to happen that indicate it's not true. You know, for instance, where is that guy that's calling fire down from heaven? That's going to be a big indicator, so if you don't see that, and hopefully we're in a place where we don't have to worry about that, but if we begin to see those kind of things, then we've got to say, uh-oh, I guess I better pack my bags and be ready to go wherever we're going. So he says, "not to be shaken in mind or troubled, either by spirit or by word or by letter, as if from us, as though the day of Christ had come." So one of the things mentioned here is as don't let, you know, there are spirit beings. You know, Satan is a spirit being. The demons are spirit beings, and they are influential. And they seek to do things that will impress you and cause you possibly to go in a direction. Wow, look at this spiritual manifestation. And so we have to be able to discern the spirits. That is, we're able to see what's going on and know that this spirit is leading us astray. So crucial to that is knowing the truth. Because Satan is a liar, The demons are liars. They are not going to point you in the direction of the truth. So if something is out there seeking to impress you and get you to follow along, you have to say, is this spirit or whatever it is pointing us to the truth? And if it's not, you have to say, I can't follow that. So that's where knowing the truth is so crucial. It is so, so crucial. So it says, let no one deceive you. Let no one deceive you by any means, for that day will not come unless the falling away comes first. So when it's talking about a falling away, what's that talking about? Falling away from what? It's talking about the truth. People fall away from the truth. So for whatever reason, they no longer follow the truth. They no longer adhere to it. And there are various reasons. They may actually be deceived. They may be pressured. Different things can take place that can cause us to fall away from the truth. And when this kind of thing begins to take place, it says, and the man of sin is revealed, the son of perdition. So you see, son of perdition. So who? There's only one other mention of a son of perdition in the scriptures. And that one mention is in regard to Judas. Judas was called a son of perdition. In essence, he was a renegade disciple. A renegade disciple who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God, or that is worshipped so that he sits as God in the temple of God. And most commentators have looked at this and they feel that it's speaking of a literal temple. And if it is a literal temple, I don't see that. I don't see that. And with the political changes that are on the horizon, I'm not sure that the political changes would usher in the rebuilding of a temple. So we'll have to wait and see on that. The Bible is telling you the truth. And so when I see a temple go up, then I know, okay, this is getting, as they say, it's getting real. It says that he's showing himself that he is God. Paul says, do you not remember that when I was still with you, I told you these things? So it's amazing that Paul had this understanding, but Paul was very familiar with the scriptures. And the only scriptures that Paul had was the Old Testament. There was no New Testament. So whatever he was able to come to understand had to be discerned by his reading and understanding the Old Testament. So, so he's telling of this, and he says, now you know what is restraining that he may be revealed in his own time. And one thing that we have to realize is there has been, Satan and the demons have a plan. Satan's had a plan, and he's wanted to move forward with that plan from the time Adam and Eve were created. He's wanted to push forward with that plan, and God has said, sorry, you're not able to do that. I'm not going to allow you to do that. So God has held Satan and his plan back, and he's only going to allow that plan to go forward at the right time, when God's going to basically get out of the way and say, okay, it's time. It's time. And that restraint will come to an end. It says, for the mystery of lawlessness is already at work. And it was already at work in Paul's time. And it has been at work ever since. And that's why Christ said at the end of the age, lawlessness will abound. Lawlessness will abound. And just ask yourself, do you see any indication that lawlessness is here, that lawlessness abounds? Just look around. And it's an important thing to keep an eye on. It says, only he who now restrains will do so until he is taken out of the way, and then the lawless one will be revealed, whom the Lord will consume with the breath of his mouth and destroy with the brightness of his coming. So he is going to, this individual is going to become very influential, and he will be influential till the coming of Christ. And with the coming of Christ, that will all come to an end. He says that, and this is religious deception that's going to be taking place. And the reason they were deceived is they did not receive the love of the truth, that they might be saved. They did not receive the love of the truth that they might be saved. Thus, spiritual salvation is the subject. He's talking about salvation. And the truth is essential to my salvation and your salvation and the salvation of all God's people. And for this reason, God will send them strong delusion that they should believe the lie, that they all may be condemned who did not believe the truth but had pleasure in unrighteousness. So the big lie is coming. Deception is coming. And we have a body of belief that we know to be true. And the question is, if somebody challenges that, do we have that love of the truth that will help us to deal with it? I know that when we went through this, you know, 25 years ago, one of the things that was hard to do was to figure it out. Now, there were some people that figured it out right away. I wasn't one of those people. And so it took a while. You know, people said, yeah, I had it figured out immediately. And I'm like, well, I wasn't one of those guys. And I'm not going to admit it, but I didn't know. The one thing that was taking place was I always felt I loved the truth. So if you love the truth and somebody puts out an idea that goes against that, you may not fully understand how to refute that. You may have some doubts about the right way to go. But see, if you love the truth, then it's going to bother you. It's going to bother you. And it's bothering you, and if you seek God and you seek his help to help you sort it out, God will help you. You know, the things that they were teaching, I'll always remember I was out mowing my yard, or the yard for the property where we were living, and I'm out there thinking about this, and I had thought about this a lot. And while I was out there mowing, I thought about, you know what? Now, if I go down this path, I can actually accept this. So I'd rationalize, I can accept it. But then I said, nah, I'm not doing that. And my feeling is God was merciful. It's not because I'm the smartest person around. It's that God was merciful and helped you to see the truth. And if you love God and you love his truth, then you can be assured that if you are confronted in this way, that if you beseech God and you seek to keep the truth and you want to keep the truth because you love the truth, God's going to protect you. God's going to see you through. And he did. And I always think it wasn't because of I'm the smartest guy. It was because God was merciful. And sometimes that's how it is. But if you love the truth, you're already in the right place. You love it, you keep it, you practice it. And when you're challenged on the truth, you have to say, I know this is right. And the challenge they put forward gives me some reason to wonder. But you got to realize the answer is the truth. And you go back to the truth and you ask God to help you see it. And God will. So the work of the man of sin is described in spiritual terms, which the church would easily relate to in their circumstance. And as I said, it talks about a falling away, and a falling away from the truth, and people have. They knew the truth, they followed the truth, but when they were challenged, they folded. for whatever reason, and there are different reasons why people do. And it's interesting, as you look at it, mention the temple and this man of sin sitting in the temple of God, it seems to indicate that that really is a temple. You look at various, you might look at the expositor's Bible commentary. It talks about this, and it talks about scriptures in Daniel and in Matthew and Mark, which seem to demand an actual building. So we don't know that. I've heard different things over the years, and you know what? When I see it, I'll say, I guess it was a real building. But whatever is going to work out will fulfill this prophecy perfectly, whether it's a real building or not. It talks about refers to a mystery of lawlessness already being at work. And the word there for lawlessness is anomia, and lawlessness. And as you look at what's going on in our time, it's becoming a more lawless time. And keeping the law and the rule of law and all of that is no longer quite what it was. So you have lawlessness being put forward, and nobody cares. And there are people that care, but more and more people don't mind. They're willing to live in a lawless world. And you don't want to live in a lawless world if you can avoid it. So in verse 10 in 2 Thessalonians, it speaks of unrighteous deception on those who receive not a love of the truth. And right now is when we learn to love the truth. We learn what the truth is, and we learn to love it. Why? Because it's the only path that works. There is no other path that works. Man's tried all of them, and all sinful paths fail. They rely on human reason, and they just don't work. In verse 11 of 2 Thessalonians 2, it says, it centers on the message to the believer, and the believer is subject to the deception unless he holds on to the truth with a singular love. So we have to know the truth, live the truth, and when we're challenged, we know the answer. But now's the time to get it square in your mind. We don't want to wait till we're confronted. We don't want to wait till somebody's calling down fire from heaven. That may be a little on the late side. So we can become prepared now. We have the freedom to read our Bibles and study our Bibles, and we have the freedom to dig into God's Word. But there's coming a time when that's going to be hard to do. And we don't want to be in that circumstance where we're trying to get our act together when everything's falling apart. So now is the time. As we look at this and we love the truth, it is like it talks about in Revelation chapter 2, the deep love, the love, that first love that we have for God's truth. And so we realize that Satan is an enemy. He's going to make war on us. He's made war on God's people in the past, and he will do so again. As we consider the original setting of this letter, Paul writes to the congregation in Thessalonica, sometime after having founded the church there, they heard all of this, and I wonder what they thought. And they, I'm sure, being members of the church, I wonder if they didn't think back to Daniel and correlate some of this with what Daniel had to say. But the thing is, as you look at Daniel and you look at what Paul is saying, Paul is talking about a religious figure. And if you go back and read Daniel 11 and some of the verses dealing with the little horn and all of that, it's not talking about a religious figure. It's a political figure who conquers. And there is going to be a religious figure who is going to be very powerful and very influential, but there's also going to be, as Paul tells us, a religious figure. So political and religious, they're both going to join together and accomplish the purpose that will come about at the end of the age. So you can look at Daniel 11, and sometimes people say that they're both the same thing, and they're not. They're two different figures if you read carefully Daniel 11 and 2 Thessalonians. The man of sin not only claims to speak for God or claim God-like power and authority, he claims to be God. Now, that's an amazing statement. I am God. We've had people that say they're gods, but as far as an individual saying, I am God, I don't think I've never seen that, and that's not been something that's taken place historically. So as we come to the into the age, there's going to be somebody that declares themselves to be God. He's a religious figure, and he's lined up with this political figure. And that is goes well beyond saying, I am a god or I'm like God, but this is really a dramatic overstep by the individual. So we have seen that the man of sin is like the political powers of the past, but we could but he's not exactly like them. And so as you go back to the and look at the past, and you look at Adam and Eve as an example, their sin was to take to themselves the prerogative of deciding good from evil. They decided good from evil, and this was a direct violation of God's purpose and will for mankind. And that type of decision is something God reserves only to himself. And Adam and Eve made that choice, and there's going to be somebody that comes onto the scene that has no qualms about making the same claim. When you're God, you're limitless. You could do whatever you want. So under the sway of Satan's deceptive influence, man has aspired to be as God from the beginning. And in the end, this aspiration will be personified through two individuals. But one will have power to deceive with signs and miracles. No political power in the Bible is ever depicted as having signs, using signs and miracles. That's not something that the political power did, but the religious power is doing that. You find this on two occasions where we see religious figures using signs and miracles to perform a work of deception. Think about it. At what time in history did that take place? That took place in Moses' time, where Moses is speaking to Pharaoh, and you had the magicians were able to do all of these miracles and signs at that time. And then you have you have the same thing taking place in Acts chapter 8 with a man named Simon Magus. Acts chapter 8 speaks of Simon Magus. You might read that, Acts chapter 8, verses 9 through 11. It says, but there was a certain man called Simon, who previously practiced sorcery in the city and astonished the people of Samaria, claiming that he was someone great, to whom they all gave heed, from the least to the greatest, saying, this man is the great power of God. And they heeded him because he had astonished them with his sorceries for a long time. So Simon Magus was very influential in the city of Samaria and went on to be a very significant and influential individual elsewhere. And what we find with the man of sin is a religious figure using sorceries to deceive people, just like Simon Magus. So this religious figure is going to come on the scene in the future, and he's going to be very influential. So as you look at, go on here in Revelation 13, it talks about this false prophet coming on the scene and powerfully influencing the world. And Revelation 13 and 2 Thessalonians 2 go mesh together quite well. So as you look at this, are we talking about the same mind, that is, Satan, divided historically and prophetically between two persons, the political beast and the religious false prophet? Christ said that a house divided against itself cannot stand. And Satan has decided his efforts to thwart the plan of God between the political and the religious realm. And that's what he's done throughout history. Let's look at Luke chapter 11, verses 14 through 20. Luke chapter 11, verses 14 through 20. It says, "And he was casting out a demon, and it was mute. So it was, when the demon had gone out, that the mute spoke. And the multitudes marveled, but some of them said, 'He cast out demons by Beelzebub, the ruler of demons.' Others, testing him, sought from him a sign from heaven, but he, knowing their thoughts, said to them, 'Every kingdom divided against itself is brought to desolation, and a house divided against a house falls. If Satan also is divided against himself, how will his kingdom stand? Because you say, I cast out demons by Beelzebub, and if I cast out demons by Beelzebub, by whom do your sons cast them out? Therefore, they will be your judges. But if I cast out demons with the finger of God, surely the kingdom of God has come upon you." The reason that the language in Daniel and Thessalonians and Revelation is similar when describing the little horn, the prince, is that the same mind is behind each. Satan is the one behind them. Satan's system or empire underwent a change during the first century period at the time of the spiritual church of God was coming into existence. So there was a change that took place. Up to and including the time of Rome and the fourth beast of Daniel 7, Satan worked through a system wherein religion and politics was essentially under one head. So as you go back to the time of Nebuchadnezzar, he was the head religiously and politically. As you go back to Alexander, he was the head religiously and politically. And the same thing is true with the Roman emperors. After the rise of the false church, a division comes about at the time of Rome's fall and the false church's rise to prominence. At that time, there's a separation between the political and the religious. So the leader of the religious group was powerful in his own and was his own kingdom, and you had the political leaders too. You had the two of them. We see, and so there's, so you have like the separation between church and state in a sense. I mean, you go back to Napoleon. Napoleon was definitely the political leader. But what did he do when he wanted the Pope to basically sanction what he was doing? Didn't he grab the crown and put it on his own head? I don't need you to do it. I can do it myself. So Satan's house has been divided against itself, but for one moment in time prior to Christ's coming, they're going to come back together. They're going to join back together, so the political and the religious will be joined together, working together as one. Look at Revelation chapter 17, verses 16 and 17. Revelation chapter 17, verses 16 and 17. They don't get along. They don't get along. Revelation chapter 17, verses 16 and 17. It says, "And the ten horns which you saw on the beast, these will hate the harlot," that is the church, "and make her desolate and naked, eat her flesh and burn her with fire." So the political leaders and the political entity is going to turn on the church. It says in verse 17, "For God has put it into their hearts to fulfill his purpose and to be of one mind and to give their kingdom to the beast until the words of God are fulfilled." So the nature of the whole system is that it deceives the whole world, and Paul has been warning about that and warning us at the same time. And so we see this is going to play out at the end of the age. And you look at why would the political power want the religious power to be joined with it? Why would that be? Because that sanctions, that lends credence to what the political power is going to do. If the political power by itself is powerful and influential, but not like having the two joined together. So the religious figure, the false prophet, is going to lend credence to the political power. So the political power can say, look, I'm being backed up by this miracle worker over here, and it's going to allow me to do more. And I need this political, this religious figure to help me to be successful. So the coming man of sin represents the apex of evil and rebellion against God. And it will be powerful politically, and it will be powerful religiously. And the religious power seeks to deceive the whole world. And the Bible tells us we can be deceived. We're not invulnerable to this, but the question is, when we're confronted, what will we do? And it's going to make war with the saints. So do you think you're going to hold up if you are not, you don't know what you believe and why you believe it? Once you're under that kind of pressure, it's hard to stand. So the thing is to believe it now, and that way you know what you believe and why you believe it, and you won't be deceived. And as you stay close to God, God will see you through. And you know, it's the promise of what is coming, there's nothing fun about it. But as we know what we believe and why we believe it, and we love the truth, God will see us through. So between now and then, make sure that you come to believe, practice, and love the truth. Thanks, everybody, for your attention. And so we're going to, we began going through the book of John on Wednesday, so we're going to continue through the book of John. But there are some interesting things that you can look at in the book of John that I think you'll find interesting and encouraging. And as you look at what the Apostle John had to say to the church in his time, and he's still saying to all of us. So please have a wonderful Thanksgiving. And as Thanksgiving comes, it's easy to focus on all the good stuff that comes on Thanksgiving. But think about the blessings that God has given to us. We live in a tumultuous time, but God has still blessed us. And take those things into consideration and give thanks for them as you enjoy that fine meal with family and friends. Have a great week. Have a great Thanksgiving.